The purpose of this speaker series now is to focus on social justice in Canada. We want to educate people to improve social justice in this country. Canadians have a reputation for being a kinder, gentler nation. We're proud of that. We would like to be even better. We want to lessen the gap between us and the disadvantaged or marginalized people in our country. Sweden has probably the best reputation in the world for looking after its disadvantaged and marginalized people. So who better to help us understand how they do that and the differences and similarities between Canada and Sweden than Sweden's ambassador to Canada, Per Sjögren. Sweden has almost the smallest wealth gap in the world. We can measure the wealth gap by dividing the average income of the highest 20% of the people by the income of the lowest 20% of the people. For example, if the average income of the lowest 20% of the people in Canada is $24,000 a year, and the average income of the highest 20% is $130,000 a year, we divide the 24,000 into the 130,000, and we come up with a number of 5.5, which is the number for Canada. In Sweden, that number is 4.0. Only two developed countries in the world have a lower ratio than Sweden: Japan at 3.4 and Norway at 3.9. And the rest of the Scandinavian countries are all clustered in the low 4 number. Incidentally, Canada at 5.5 is lower than the UK at 7.2, or the USA at 8.4, and way, 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 way below Sierra Leone at 57.6. We have a lot we can learn from Sweden. Per Sjögren brings a wealth of experience to us. He has been ambassador to Canada since September 2014. He has also served in Washington and at the Swedish mission to the United Nations in Geneva. He was also ambassador to the Council of Europe for 6 years. And to enhance his relevance to today's topic, prior to becoming ambassador to Canada, he was head of the Department for International Law and Human Rights in the Ministry for Foreign Affairs in Stockholm. Ladies and gentlemen, Per Sjögren.
Thank you, Mr. Wells, and let me also thank Mr. Dan Lang and Mr. Jim Black from the Compassionate Justice Group at Eglinton St. George's Church. And thank you to all of you for having come here today to listen about what I have to say about the Swedish model, and with special focus on social justice. Before, at the outset, I would also like to say, because now I will speak about Sweden and to some extent the Nordic countries, I would like to say that there is also a great interest in Sweden about Canada. And it's a growing interest. And it's not only ice hockey, it's a wide interest. And I receive numerous delegations to the embassy looking into the Canadian society in many fields. Two areas where we have a special interest is the Canadian educational system and the very good results that it shows in international, when they measure results internationally, especially the OECD examinations. And the other area where there's a great interest in Sweden is the Canadian migration and integration system, Canada being the most advanced country in the world when it comes to orderly migration, especially labor migration, but also many other kinds of migration. So these are two areas. So I want to balance a bit to say also that that there is a great interest in Canada from our side. When it comes to Swedish and Scandinavian model, as was mentioned here and as you often can read in international comparisons of global competitiveness, the Nordic countries are almost always found at or near the top. And in a meta-index that is an aggregate of 16 different global indices like competitiveness, quality of life, gender equality, etc., the Nordic countries top the list or are normally among the 5-10 on the list. Sweden was recently ranked as the second most innovative country in the world after South Korea, and we were ranked number one in the EU when it comes to social justice. So what are the reasons? Is there such a thing as a Nordic-Swedish model, particular to the Nordic region? And if so, what explains the relative success of the Nordic model? Will it last? Is it transferable to other parts of the world? The central feature of the so-called Nordic or Swedish model is, for our part, we can almost date it back to a certain historic event in 1938 with the so-called Saltsjöbaden Agreement between the then social democratic government and the privately owned industrial sector. The compromise in this agreement, which followed a bit of an unrest on the labor market and in our society, the compromise constituted a middle way between a free market, capitalism, on the one hand, with a comprehensive welfare state and collective bargaining at national level, on the other hand. The ownership of most of large companies, except for state-owned monopolies, stayed private and has been private since then, and expanded side by side by a large public sector. The Swedish model can be summarized as follows: a large privately owned industrial sector, a large public sector financed by taxes and governed by the government, a large trade union movement. The state plays an important role in the labor market and with different measures and policies. And the ambition is to achieve an even distribution of income and wealth, social justice. These factors have become well-known trademarks for the Swedish economy and is still basically valid with some modifications. Looking first at our national economy, the key pillars are allocation for health and education. 35 to 40% of the Swedish GDP goes to health and education and is financed by taxes. Another 10% is for what could be called regalian functions, police, courts, army, foreign affairs, and general administration. That brings the cost for the state up to approximately 50% of GDP, which roughly corresponds to what taxes consumes of the national product. One could say that the growth of the fiscal state, the total amount of taxes relative to national income, over the last century, basically reflects the development of a social state in the Nordic countries, but I would say it's not unique for the Nordic countries. Many wealthy and rich states globally have also experienced a growing fiscal state, but there are differences in a level, I would say, between 30 and 55% of the GDP, of the national income, are linked to taxes in many countries. But the mega trend has been the same in rich and wealthy countries. The Swedish model refers above all to a functioning, or I would say first a solid economy, a functioning labor market, and welfare policies. Even though there are some different approaches to the administration of the welfare state, the Swedish model is distinguished from other types of welfare states by its emphasis on social cohesion and to maximize labor force participation, to promote gender equality, to be egalitarian and with extensive benefit levels, income redistribution, and, as I mentioned, an expansive fiscal policy. Within the notion of being a welfare state, the Swedish model has changed somewhat, naturally, over the years. In the 1970s, which was a bit of a peak when it comes to volume and benefit levels, the model focused on results at social level. During the 1980s, the expansion of the public sector slowed down, and in the serious economic crisis in Sweden during the 90s, we had an early crisis in Sweden, very linked to the Swedish bank system. That crisis led to a reduced public sector even further, and including cutbacks in the social insurance system. And I will come back to a bit more about that later. At the same time as we have experienced an evolvement of our public sector and our welfare system, we have had several governments with different political colors, let's say, left, center, and right-based. And all governments, regardless of shade or opinion, has maintained the pillars of the welfare state. So I would like one could say that the assessment is that the foundation of the Swedish model have survived. It's not questioned, the pillar of it, but there are discussion about levels, benefit levels, tax levels, etc., but the pillars are not questioned. So my introductory rhetoric question, it has survived, and there is an agreement about that. But there are also areas where the model has expanded and improved and been also unchanged. One area where it has actually expanded is childcare, which actually has improved. We have now at the minimum 5 weeks vacation. Health are basically free, and there is a heavily subsidized medication system. And a most recent reform was decided last year by the government or the parliament with the introduction of free dental care up to 18 years of age. Social insurance is basically intact, even though levels have decreased over the years. It's important to note or understand that the Swedish welfare model is not primarily a policy to benefit the poor, but rather a whole array of policies focusing on employment, productivity, social protection on the basis of solidarity and inclusion. So it's rather to prevent to become poor than to benefit the poor. And the welfare provisions are universal. They are for all, regardless of... Some are completely regardless of income, some are linked to a progressive scale. But the welfare provisions are universal. It's not we and them. It's for all. To better understand our system, I would like to mention more specific, in detail, seven pillars of our welfare system. And I begin with taxes, which are the basis in many ways for the welfare system. As is well known, Sweden is among the countries of the world that spend the highest percentage of gross of the GDP on public social services. And as I mentioned, the funding goes first and foremost to the entirely tax-financed education system and to a heavily subsidized health care system. All have access to medical services. Education is free, including at a university level. And retirement includes a basic pension, unemployment insurance is available, and many continuing education retraining programs are tax-financed at the labor market. On top of these basic benefits, many workers enjoy other advantages based on their salary sector or workplace. And to support these social services, all levels of government receive their share of tax revenues, the municipalities, the county councils, and the national government. And but to note, which might surprise some of you, is that when it comes to our tax system, we have neither an inheritance tax, we have nor a wealth tax, and the real estate tax has been replaced by a lower municipal fee. So there we differ from many countries who have a lower income tax system than we have. A second pillar is the local self-government principle. Swedish municipalities, county councils and regions are responsible for providing a significant proportion of all public services. The right to local self-government, including the right to levy taxes, is stipulated in the Swedish constitution. And national taxes are levied as a percentage of income, but municipality taxes and county council taxes have more of a flat rate, and each council can decide about the tax level. The average local tax rate in Sweden is just below 30%, and in order to ensure fairness, a system has been introduced with the aim to redistribute revenues of the municipalities and county councils according to regional needs. This equalization system is managed at state level. A third area in our welfare system is regards children and parenthood. We have a general child benefit, which is income neutral, starting about 1,200 Swedish crowns, which is about $100 Canadian dollar per child. And then there is a system to supplement for funding if you have more than one child, actually up to 8 children. So you get more, so to say, the benefit level goes up if you have a second child, etc. That is to promote birth of children. So that's for all. A number of initiatives over the years have been taken to protect the rights of the child and look after their interests. In 1979, Sweden became the first country in the world to criminalize beating or spanking children. The government has also appointed an ombudsman for children, obliged to enforce the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child in the Swedish society. Parents get a total of 480 days of paid leave per child, which must be claimed before the child turns 12. Each parent has 90 days of leave reserved specifically for him or her, which means that these cannot be transferred to the other parent. And we have a discussion if we should have a mandatory rule or legislation saying that the parents have to share it equally, completely equally, but that has not been agreed upon. But instead, there's been an introduction of an equality bonus. So, for example, a father is at home using the 90 days of mandatory time to be with the child. If he adds another month, he gets a bonus, so he gets more. The level of benefit goes up. But these are pillars that are been since a long time to have a good protection and a good child care and good economic conditions, and provide for parents to be at home when the children are small. Education is a fourth pillar. There are no school fees, and everyone has to attend school for 9 years. Sweden and Finland are, by the way, the only countries in the world which serve free school lunches to all students all the way up. Virtually all students who finish compulsory school start senior high school, and the largest proportion of municipal budgets, approximately 45%, is spent on education. Municipalities also provide nursery schools for children from age 1 until school starts, 6 or 7 years of age. And it's not completely free. Parents pay less than 10% of the cost. There is a ceiling. So in Stockholm, parents are not paying more than $120 per month for each child. Above that is covered by the Stockholm City Council. Higher education, which is also free, is financed largely by tax revenues, and the government provides 80% of funding for Swedish universities and university colleges. All Swedish students who study at university or university college are entitled to financial assistance, which consists of a grant component and a loan component. Repayment of the loan part is income dependent and shall be finalized before the student turns 60. Healthcare is, as I mentioned, tax-funded and largely decentralized. All care providers that meet county council requirements are now entitled to start a health center that is reimbursed with public funds. So we have a growing number of private healthcare centers, but they are financed by the government, but they are privately governed and run. And they can also gain profit. They can be a profit part of their activities. Patient fees varies between 10 and 45 Canadian dollar. But after a patient has paid a total of 150 Canadian dollar during 1 year, medical consultations are free within 12 months. So we have a ceiling when it comes to fees when seeking medical consultation. And there's also a similar ceiling for prescription medication. There's also a ceiling of $300 per year. A recent reform is also that all who are above 85 have free medical consultation care in all parts of our medical system. The general social insurance system also includes sickness benefits. Employers are responsible for providing sick pay for the first 14 days, and for longer illnesses, the social insurance system grants a maximum of 364 days at 80% of the employer's income. Longer benefit periods may be granted for severe illnesses. Then about labor market. Sweden has, as I mentioned, a long tradition of government labor market policies, which has resulted in a variety of measures to keep the employment up, to have the labor force at the market as far as possible. It includes, as I mentioned, also 5 weeks of paid vacation, well over a year of parental leave, and an employer pension contribution. Significant also for labor market policy is that it's based on collective bargainings, and which established a role for negotiation when it comes to wages between the employer, the employee, and trade unions. Wages are primarily regulated with these collective agreements, and the government cannot intervene in wage negotiations on the labor market. The government is prohibited to intervene. And that also means that we have no minimum wage system in Sweden. It's all regulated by the players in the labor market. I think this is the time also to say a bit about how the system have evolved especially in the light of the economic crisis in Sweden in the beginning of the 90s and the economic, more global crisis in 2008. There was an assessment of that the benefit levels when we had this economic crisis were too high. We had to increase incentives to maintain the full labor employment, and so therefore earned income taxes have been reduced. The unemployment benefits went down during the 90s, but also around 2008-2010, and these reforms have been important factors in Swedish crisis management during these two recessions. That has led to that they were also served Sweden well, I must say. Between 2000 and 2015, we had a very strong economic growth in Sweden, and about 800,000 new jobs were created. But it also led to that the total tax levels of the GDP went down from 49 to 43.3%. So there's been, during the past 10, 15 years, a considerable decrease when it comes to the tax level in relation to the GDP. Public employment has also gone down from 39 to 28%. Savings. This is a result of savings within the public sector. And many of our monopolies have been privatized. There are very few public monopolies still left. So these are some of the measures that had to be taken within our welfare policy system in times where the economy was weak and we had recession. But overall, they have served Sweden well. About the elderly, of Sweden's now 10 million inhabitants, we turned 10 million last week actually, approximately 20% have passed the retirement age of 65. And this level is projected to raise to 23% in 2030. Sweden has the largest proportion of people aged 80 or above among EU member states, between 5 and 6% of the population. Most elderly care is funded by municipal taxes and government grants. Only approximately 5% of the financing comes from patient charges of a total budget of about 100 billion Swedish kronor. The bulk of the elderly care is provided by the municipalities, but also in this area, in addition to the health care, we have a growing number of private actors. And everybody is allowed to choose whether they want to, their home assistance or special housing to be managed by a public or a private operator. The pension system consists of three parts: a national pension, an employer-financed occupational pension, and private pension savings. People contribute to their national pension, which is income-based, for every year they work. And you count all years you work. I know in some countries you have, so say, for 35 years is a basis for pension, but we count all years that you work. There's also a small portion of the national pension called the guarantee pension. And should the guarantee pension not be enough, maintenance support for the elderly provides at least a net to ensure a decent standard of that. So this is basically what I wanted to say about our system, so you get a picture of it. And just to sum up in 6 points where we believe or where we assess that our where there are positive effects of our Swedish model. First, a high degree of gender equality, including both men and women in the labor market. Women are at 80% in the labor market, and and there is no real difference now between men and women at the labor market. And this is visible if you go to Sweden. You see men and women, it's all, for many families, a jigsaw puzzle to find how to bring this together. But our extensive childcare system is the reason that it works. We have a relatively high birth rate, which fills the demographic gap in comparison with other European and many other countries. We have 9.92 children per woman is the birth rate. And in addition with the immigration level, which is quite high to Sweden, we have a positive growth when it comes to our population. We also assess that our system is conducive for high growth in our economy. We have our growth last year was 3.5%, which is I think highest in Europe. We have a high degree of productivity, competitiveness, increased real wages and employment. What's interesting is also that there's a high degree of interpersonal confidence at the horizontal level vis-a-vis politicians and public institutions. And that's not always the case in many countries. But there is a strong confidence in Swedish public institutions among Swedes. And I sometimes get the question, can this high tax level be maintained? And that's hard to know. It has decreased somewhat, but it's hard to know. But the logic answer is, as long as government, the public institutions deliver on education, healthcare, etc., as we see that there is we get something for our high taxes, I think it can be maintained. And that's has been proven so far that it works. But there is a very high degree of trust among Swedes in our institutions. I think also we managed the crisis in the 90s, economic crisis, and in 2008 well. We had a buffer in our economy in 2008 when we had the global crisis, which actually meant that we could invest a lot in our economy, where other countries didn't have this buffer and had to decide on strong and advanced austerity measures, which we didn't really need to do. And in many respects, the labor market is in good shape, even though we have a relatively high unemployment rate, a bit less than 7%, which is high to our standards. And this is especially noticeable among young people and immigrants. And these are challenges for us to get young people earlier into the labor market. It's a major issue in Sweden at the moment. But also to get immigrants into the labor market. We are a major immigration country. And if you look at the unemployment rates among immigrants, it's about 15 to 18%. But non-immigrants, it's about 3 to 4%, virtually no unemployment rate. So there is a gap, and as I mentioned also, among young people. So finally, even though we believe that there have been mainly positive effects of our welfare system, there are always challenges. How should the welfare sector be designed in the future? The balance between public and private is another issue that is constantly on the table, which role should the state play, which role should the county councils play, and which role should the private sector play. And of course the construction of the social insurance system. I think one answer of this is that we have to evolve it all the time. We have to adjust it into realities, economic realities, but also other realities. And it's not a static system. It's a system that needs to be evolved. It needs to be improved. And the politicians and people in Sweden, all of us, we have to be resilient. We have to be active in order to maintain our system. If I shall point on one or two factors which I think is really important and which are really a bit specific for Sweden and also to a large extent the Nordic countries, is the gender equality. It is a very important part of our society, and it has also served our economy, but also social life very well. That's something that I think is looked upon also by many other countries. So I would like to thank you for your attention, look forward to questions and comments about our welfare system. Thank you very much.